if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod. And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Bond. Tom Bond.
Thank you for joining us once again. Of course, we're talking about two more episodes of Sliders. This week we're discussing Jillian of the Spirits and Obsession for the Ladies. So the first episode this week is Jillian of the Spirits, written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, directed by Paris Barclay. This originally aired March 15th, 1996.
Something strange about this telephone book.
What's that? It
goes from electric to elevator with nothing on electronics at all. It's the same with TV. No TV repair shops, TV suppliers, TV stations.
Antique cars, old-fashioned switchboards, no TV. This is all weird. What's so funny?
Oh, life, Mr. Brown. Here we are, stuck in a world that's in the technological stone age, with a timer that's broken that comes from the space age.
Well, what are we going to do? I mean, this is no damn joke.
Oh, we'll just go pop out and find a computer store, shall we? One moment. Excuse me, my friend. Can you direct me to the nearest computer store? I want a small digital reader.
Shh, keep your voice down. The Bureau of Anti-Technology would have my innkeeper's license.
We start at the end of a very wet slide, our heroes trapped in a torrential downpour. As they slide out, a lightning bolt hits the vortex, causing the timer to burn out and get scorched, thus causing Quinn to be trapped on the astral plane. The group heads to a 1950s-style town, but is almost arrested because Arturo's digital watch is contraband in this world where technology was banned after the bombing of Hiroshima in Japan. They meet a girl named Jillian who has the ability to talk to people on the astral plane, and possibly other planes as well. She gives the sliders a message from Quinn that he is all right, and with them, albeit on the astral plane. The sliders soon find a friend in Quinn's father, Michael, a tech sympathizer who lets them use his basement as a workplace. Arturo begins working, having a difficult time of it. However, they are soon visited by the Bureau of Anti-Technology, who takes the timer and Michael away. Meanwhile, Quinn helps Jillian out by exposing one of her tormentors as a thief who stole money from Jillian's cash register at work. Jillian agrees to help Quinn again in return. After the two see Michael being arrested, they follow him and discover that Michael is actually working with Bayside Power and Electric, who are poised to release their stolen and captured technology, cornering the market once Congress removes the tech bans. Remy and Arturo break into Bayside Power, stealing the timer back before heading to Michael's house to finish repairing the timer. Once fixed, Michael appears, threatening them and demanding they turn over the timer. Arturo activates the vortex and Quinn is illuminated by the energies. Quinn implores his father to do the right thing as the sliders bid each other a tearful and heartfelt goodbye, being that this may well be the last time they see Quinn since the vortex is not activated on the astral plane. It's not until a minute later that the vortex then passes through the astral plane, allowing Quinn to slide and finally rejoin his friends in the physical realm.
Jillian.
Hi. Quinn's with me. He wants to tell you something. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's fine, except he can be a little pushy.
I tend to get that way in life and death
situations. So where exactly is he?
I'm right here, Rembrandt.
The chill you just felt, Quinn touched you.
Wow. Old people used to say that was someone stepping on your grave.
Quinn, they confiscated the timer.
He knows.
I know.
Tell him.
All right. He's asked me to tell you that his father knows the two men who
took
it.
It's a scam.
It's a scam. They work for...
Bayside Power and Electric.
Bayside Power and Electric.
All right.
What?
Tell him about my father.
Okay, his father's going to try and milk you for as much information as he can.
And then kill them.
And then they plan to kill you.
Tell him where the timer is.
All right, the timer's in some sort of secret research lab at the power plant near the...
Embarcadero Center.
Near the Embarcadero Center.
Tell him about the technology.
Okay, I know.
Sorry.
And Quinn says they've got all sorts of modern technology hidden there, and if you can get in, he thinks that you might be able to find what you need.
And how does he suggest we do that, then, Hey, my boy. Transform ourselves into a crack commando unit and raid the power company?
Ask him if he's got a better idea.
All right, so getting into some trivia.
All right, so we've got some here. Originally, they were going to spend a little more time on Rain World. They weren't there for very long. There was a couple extra lines here and there that they mentioned, and you can read those again on Dimensions of Continuity. If you go to their Lost and Found section, you can read those extra lines. And the Vortex was actually going to open and then fluctuate and actually close, open again before Quinn jumped through. So it showed there was more of a problem with the Vortex, with the lightning and everything going on originally. There were some other minor lines peppered throughout the whole script for certain scenes. There was something Remy said about the church being crowded because they arrived there on a Wednesday, and it was just odd to see so many people being at a church on Wednesday. So it was sort of gave an indication of the power of religion on this world. There was an extra line about the government and how everything, the technology was banned. They were talking about the Luddite party. So not just Democrat and, Republicans. There was also a Luddite party. The 17th Amendment was about prohibitions. So prohibitions against technology, obviously. Originally, Bayside Electric was not going to be that. It was going to be called General Electric. And I can see why they want to change that, because they don't want to get in trouble with, big corporation.
And don't want to be getting sued.
Exactly. We don't want to get sued. So let's change it to Bayside Electric, Saved by the Bell and everything. Go Bayside. On the no-tech world, there was supposed to be a couple lines from Quinn's father saying that his son had dreams about sliding, that he would talk to his father about these recurring dreams about going between dimensions. He didn't say it was actually called sliding, but it was something that they had a conversation about, and they were pretty fascinated by it. Yeah, I thought that was a neat little twist to it there. There was a little more with Remy and Quaid when Quaid. There's a little bit about Remy laughing about the whole Quaid thing when back in the Last Days episode, because they talked about it in the episode, but it went on a little bit longer, and Remy was really digging at her. He was saying things like, "So you in Cuba? You almost I like that." It was pretty cool. And then with how Arturo was, because Arturo was very on edge this episode. What Remy was saying was, "So you guys were about to this and that, and then someone had to come in and burst the bubble." Obviously he's referring to Arturo, and Arturo hears it. And like in the original script, he gets so mad. He's like, "Well, someone had to burst the bubble. The world was about to end and they were going to get it on." It was something like that. If you go to Dimensions of Continuity and look up that Lost and Found there, because it's a very funny quote. It's a very funny line that he had. Again, there's so many good lines that they have to cut out for time or whatever reason that would have been nice to have heard these actors deliver that. That was definitely one of them. In the original script, Jillian was not working at a cafe or wherever the coffee shop. She was working at a bookstore, and Quinn goes there to talk to her, and there was a lot of scenes of him following her but walking through the bookshelves, the special effects of him, being able to go through things. And they have a nice conversation there. He understands she's an outcast, and he said, "I was an outcast in my younger years, because I was smaller, I skipped grades, so I understand what you're talking about." Then they went on to talk about maybe ghosts, because, there was the whole thing about Jillian talking to spirits and things like that. They said maybe ghosts are just people who are trapped on the astral plane, and that's, that was a possibility that they were discussing, the two of them, in the library or in the bookstore. And they mentioned he mentions the Bermuda Triangle, about how things just happen to disappear there. Maybe they move on to the astral plane or something. So it didn't really add anything to the story, so I can see why they cut that. But it was just a neat little interchange there about the possibility of ghosts being people just trapped on the astral plane. Thought that was cool. There's also Arturo and Remy actually contemplating that they might have to live here for the rest of their life. And we've missed out on all these great scientific achievements, you know, if we stay here. Wade's okay with it because he says, look, people are friendly here. It's a very nice world. There's no pollution. Yeah, we don't have TV. We don't have, you know, latest technologies, but do we need that? So there was a, you know, again, like the two opposing sides that they have in these episodes, it seems like. It was Wade and going against Arturo. When they go to Bayside, Arturo was going to pick the lock. He was actually going to try to pick the lock, talking about his skills, you know, able to pick locks. And like time's just going by, the alarm's going off, and Remy says, heck with this, and he grabs a fire extinguisher and smashes the door open. And then there was a great scene that would have been neat to see. The mom, Jillian's mom, actually puts Jillian in a psychiatric ward in the episode. It was the beginning of the last act, and she puts her in there because she's freaking out because Jillian's talking to Quinn and all this, and puts her in there, and Quinn goes to her and says, you know, people are afraid of what they don't understand. Don't throw away this power. You know, this is something that makes you unique, special, you know. And mom happens to be there. She comes by and she sees Jillian talking to no one, but Jillian says to her, or says to Quinn, Jillian says to Quinn, touch her on the cheek. And immediately he tries to touch her on the cheek and she feels it just like Remy felt it. And, you know, touch her on the neck, and he touches her on the neck. And finally the mom starts to come around and she gets her out of there. So that was a neat little, you know, you could finally see where the mother really gets it, you know, and it would have been interesting to see her in the psychiatric ward. It would have, it made it for a very dark, you know, last act, but still it would have been neat. And then finally on the last world they go to on Nudity World, which you can see why they decided to cut this out. They were going, you know, you saw the postman naked and you saw the girl answer the door naked. They were going to pull out to a wider shot and you would have seen a cop naked, a mother walking with a stroller naked, kids running around naked. You could see why that wouldn't work. Why Fox said, "Yeah, let's cut that out, please. Thank you." Would have been a whole different episode. It's like Sliders After Dark.
I guess people run a little hot in that world too, because
yeah.
It was a chilly looking day.
45 seconds to closure.
Come on, Q-Ball, let's go.
I can't, Rembrandt. The vortex isn't active on the astral plane. You've got to go without me.
Is right. Go.
I love you, man.
I love you too, Crying Man.
Mallory, we will find a world where there's technology, and then I promise I will come looking for you. Goodbye, my boy. This is the hardest thing that I've ever done.
Thank you, Professor.
I'm not gonna leave you.
There's no time to be noble, Wade. There's nothing you can do for me here. The next slide might take you home. Go before it's too late. Go! Go!
Damn you!
Well, getting into our main discussion, no one can see Quinn on this world. He gets put in the astral plane, and so he's walking around like a ghost or something like that. And I have to admit, I'm not too sure about the rules of how he interacts with the world around him. It mm-hmm. seems a little bit off to me, you know, from the get-go. He's up on the rocks, you know, yelling at them, hey, I'm right here, I'm right here. And then he tries to pick up a rock, and he sort of just, like, his hand goes through it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, wasn't he just walking on the rocks?
Exactly. Why doesn't he just, like, float around or fall through the rocks, or just, you know, why doesn't he walk through everything?
Yeah, exactly. The rules don't seem right, because later he gets a taxi mm-hmm. with Jillian And he can ride perfectly fine in the taxi, but when he needs to get out, he has to walk through the door.
Yes, you are exactly like everybody else in 1996. I saw a lot of that on the messages in time we'll talk about later. But yeah, that's something that a lot of people noticed.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like you could make him walk through everything, I guess, but I don't know. Maybe budgets, you know, like when he was in town, he was like, you know, hey, can you see me? Can you see me? He's walking around the people. Like, it would have been neat to have just stood there and let the people walk through him. I don't know how much that would cost for them to do that effect. You know, I mean, they did it a couple times. Maybe it was just a budget thing. They couldn't do it so many times. I don't know.
It would make more sense if he could interact with the world around him. He right. just couldn't affect him, you know, he can't, you know, he tries to pick it up, but he can't, or, you know, he tries to knock something over, but it won't shift, it won't move.
They said, like, I'll just skip ahead here, to the messages in time, they were saying maybe the laws of physics are just broken, you know, in this episode. It's like, there's nothing, you know, you have to suspend your disbelief, you know?
That's true. Yeah. We're getting really picky here.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I also noticed in the beginning here when they go to arrest the sliders, Arturo, Remy, and Wade because of the wristwatch, you know, Quinn scares the horse. The horse goes running off, and the cop goes chasing after it. But then when they pull out to the wider shot, there's another cop there directing traffic, watching, you know, there go the sliders running away that this cop was talking about. I'm like, don't you guys help each other? I mean, traffic can wait for a second because these guys are potential criminals. But no, they, you know, it's like, whatever. See you guys.
I think it's a cool world in that they're kind of trapped in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's little bits of extra technology.
Right.
Like the priest says, it's slow goings. But yeah, it's kind of a cool world that they're sort of trapped in this 50s mentality. All right. So, and, you know, the big irony of the episode is that the timer gets burnt out.
Major.
As well. And yeah, it looks destroyed. Right. When Arturo sort of puts it up and he goes, oh, there's something wrong with the timer here. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, no, it looks destroyed. There's not something wrong with it. It is absolutely buggered.
Yes, exactly. It looked bad. I mean, the whole front was like totally like blackened.
And I love this line about the irony of it all being that they've got something from the space age, but they're in a world that's trapped in the technological stone age.
So in this episode, I've noticed that, Remy, they're really working on Remy's character. He's definitely not the comic relief anymore, but he actually uses his head in this episode. And he says, hey, you know what? Let's find, there's got to be some people on this world who like tech or want tech. So let's go find them. You know, when they go to the church, he's the one who goes, I'm going to talk to the preacher. You know, let me go talk to him. And he's the one who goes up and talks to him. So he's becoming more of a leader than he was in the first season and, you know, so far.
The weird thing is about the priest and his sort of celebrity status.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw this back in Eggheads where, like, academics were celebrities.
Right.
But they don't really go into why the priest is so celebrated that people want his autograph.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, why are the priests like so celebrated like that? It was very strange. I was like, that's odd. Like, I thought maybe, like, I didn't remember everything about this episode. I was thinking, oh, is this one where the religion is like really big? But that's another episode, I think, later on in the third season. But I was like, is this something that I just didn't remember? But no, it's just they don't explain it at all.
Remy's right at the end of the day. As he talks to the priest and he gets the information of this guy, Michael, who he counseled while in prison.
Right.
So that's a good tip. Way to go, Remy.
I did like the alt history because we got a lot of that with the bombing of Hiroshima, freaking people out. And they decide and just then, all right, we're going to get rid of this technology or we're just going to, you know, ban it and try to hold it back. Because, you know, they said something about being the devil's work or something like that. It was really good. I liked it.
It's almost like doing God's work for him or something. That's the way they see technology. And that's right. Blasphemy.
Actually, that would explain the church being so popular. Maybe they were one of the people who like preached that, you know, against technology. Because if you remember back in the 50s, they were the ones preaching against rock and roll, and they were the ones, you know, having sermons on how rock and roll is the devil's music, and they were looked up to by a lot of the adults in the you know, in the communities back then as being, you know, just that's what they need. They need this leadership to teach our young people this music is bad. So maybe that's what this is. Maybe it's since they had sermons about, you know, being against technology, and that's why they're so popular. I don't know.
It's an interesting aspect of it because I guess you can look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, today a lot more people are skeptical of religions, especially the big religions like Catholicism and stuff like that. Yep. And they turn more towards the sciences. You know, mm-hmm. why can't we believe in science, you know, evolution and all that? So, yeah, I guess it is kind of interesting to sort of try to mesh the two together or pit the two against each other.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, like, you know, while I was writing up the notes, but I just, like, right now I'm thinking that does sort of parallel rock and roll in the 50s. So it's, that's a neat way to look at it.
But thankfully, Quinn runs into someone who can see him, and that's Jillian. You know, she's this quiet girl who obviously has some sort of history with being able to see spirits of some kind, whether or not they're people who were trapped in the astral plane or not. She can see them. So she's got this like higher sense or something like that. And I guess even that is kind of trying to, you know, flow through into the story as well, because if she can see people who are trapped in the astral plane, it can be perceived as being able to see ghosts or see spirits.
Right.
And that would be considered, you know, kind of a wicked or evil thing.
And as usual, Arturo is very skeptical of the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Wade's totally on board. But yeah, I did notice that, like, even as Arturo sort of came around to it, he was still sort of going, you know, like, even if this is true, then I doubt he can interact with us or anything like that. Like, he's trying to assume that it's he can't interact with them in any kind of physical sense that we know.
Right.
It would be like an all a jumble or something like that. He's trying to get his head around it. He can't believe that you can still be in the world, but not be in the world or something like that. Yeah. So they keep up that skepticalness of Arturo, which I think was cool.
I said it in the deleted scenes because Quinn brought it up in the deleted scenes about wondering if ghosts are people who are trapped on the astral plane rather than spirits on our actual physical realm. You know, he said, maybe that's just what ghosts are. And I thought that was an interesting take on ghosts. I'd never thought about it before. But that, you know, that maybe people just end up going to the astral plane and they haunt that way. I don't know. I thought there was just a neat little tidbit that he mentioned. I thought, that's worth talking about.
Well, at the same time, Quinn doesn't actually interact with anybody else on the astral plane.
Yeah, so there's no one else there.
Yeah, so they go into it. But they don't really flesh it out or say that this is how it is.
So we really don't know. Like, we know that Jillian says she's talked to other people or spirits. So maybe she's talking to real ghosts, or maybe she's talking to people on the astral plane. We don't know. They don't really, like you said, they don't really go into it. But it brings another angle to her powers.
Yeah, exactly.
I said earlier that Remy was really enjoying the Quaid conversation, and there was much more in the deleted scenes, but still, even in this, you know, the brief moment of Quaid that we got, you know, the reminiscing about Quaid, Remy was like enjoying it. He was happy. You could see it on his face. It's like, oh yeah, you and Q-Ball, that's awesome. Like he was all for it, just like I'm all for it.
It was just a brief moment, but it was classic Remy.
I mean, Quinn, you know, if you notice though, I didn't put this down, but Quinn, he seemed to really be missing it as well. Like he enjoyed what happened, you know, like he moved closer and was talking even though they couldn't hear him. I wish they had done something with that to explore it a little bit more over the season.
But the story goes forward and they go to see this guy, Michael, and it turns out to be Michael Mallory, the return of Michael Mallory. It was good that they got the actor back.
Yes.
Same actor that was seen before, unlike last time we saw Quinn's mother, completely different woman.
She just had a lot of work done, that's all. It was the same actress. She had some work done.
You know, his character was really good too. You know, just the simple things, like he's living in a basement somewhere. You know, that sounds like something someone who's just gotten out of prison would have to do.
Yeah, it does. What was up with his basement? Like, did you notice, like, there's like, was it supposed to be, did they make those designs on the walls and the floor to make it look grungy and, you know, low rent or something?
I don't know. Like, did he paint it himself? It had like lightning bolts all over it.
Yeah, I know. That was weird. I was like, what is that? Because I'm just thinking about the first world they're on with the lightning bolts, you know, if that would relate somehow, but it, you know, never did. But I just thought that's a weird design. It was just, it distracted me at first. I was like, what is going on with the walls?
But, you know, he's got his secret stash of stuff to make right. technology, I guess.
Yeah, a row of vacuum tubes and things. Like, oh my God, how are you going to fix the timer with all this stuff?
Yeah, I love that after he pulls it down, he turns around and he goes, you know, last time I got caught with this stuff, I ended up doing 10 years in prison or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
And I was like, are you saying that as if like you're blaming them for getting you into this? Because you already had that stuff there.
Exactly. Already there, so...
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting that they sort of made him become the bad guy.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, it's a great play on the alternate world, is that mm-hmm. he's Quinn's father, so naturally we're going to be like, oh, he must be a stand-up guy.
Yeah, we can trust him.
They even go into that, you know, when they're talking about Quinn. You know, in this world, his son had died of polio because, you know, technology didn't move forward. They never cured it. Arturo sort of brings up, you know, how Quinn is such a wonderful person, a remarkable person. And mm-hmm. it sort of develops this, you know, trust of Michael Mallory almost immediately. So when he does betray them, alternate worlds, alternate people.
Very shocking.
So, yeah, I think it works great. You know, he's working for Bayside. The thing that threw me off maybe a little bit was that he seemed to, like, really enjoy working for Bayside Power.
Yeah, he did.
I thought it would be more like he was muscled into it because he's right. some sort of like prison informant. You won't go back to prison as long as you inform on people for us.
Right, because they got him out early.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, but he seemed, maybe he's getting a back end deal with some of the technology, because since he knows technology, maybe he can, whatever they have taken or stolen or hoarded for all this time, maybe he knows about it and how to modify it and fix it up and, you know, make it better. I don't know. Maybe that's why he's fine with it, because he's going to get a good deal out of it. I don't know.
They did seem to have a lot of stuff in the warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
They were talking about being able to get out, you know, mm-hmm. going to overturn laws and stuff like that. When they do, we're ready with all this technology. But it was just a bit off-putting.
Right. Oh, definitely. Now, I don't know if you noticed this. Have you seen the movie Taxi Driver?
Yes.
Because I saw it once, and actually it may sound weird, but I saw it in a music history class. So that's a whole nother thing, but we saw it in there. And, the cab driver, in this one is very amusing. When he, drops off, Jillian, he does the whole taxi driver. Are you talking to me? You must be talking to me, because I'm the only one here. I was like, oh, I see what you're doing there. I see it. Got you.
It was pretty funny. And it sort of fit into the scene as well.
Oh, it did. Definitely.
The whole play on it, because there was somebody else there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, yeah. So then we got Arturo working on the timer. In this episode, you could really see his jealousy and his short fuse just really coming to the forefront here, you know, that we've talked about in previous episodes, especially when he says, oh, the professor not up to his student standards, huh? It was quite a turn for him, I think, in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see that he's almost there as well.
Mm-hmm.
They give him this one thing that he can't see. And yeah. he even calls that out. He says, there's something here. It's probably the most simplest thing, and I can't see it. And right. it is that a classic sci-fi trope, the polarity needs reversing.
Exactly.
But it's that one thing, you know, he's so focused on it, but he just can't quite get there. And he needs Quinn's help, whether he'll admit it or not. He needs Quinn there. When Quinn actually gets the help from Jillian, it's, you know, it's a perfect resolution, really.
Oh, yeah. It's a great scene, too, you know, with them sitting there talking, you know, about helping each other and discussing her abilities. And, you know, Jillian comes around like 180 and she says, you know what, if you're stuck here forever, I will help you. I will stay and help you. In the beginning, she was like, no, leave me alone. I don't want anything to do with this. All right, I'll help you this one time. All right, I'll help you the second time. But she comes around and says, you know, if you're going to be stuck here, just you can stay with me and I will help you through this world.
And again, is they're sitting at a diner. And I'm like, how is Quinn sitting in the chair? He even took off his jacket and hung it over the chair and then sat on it.
See, I didn't catch that, but yeah, there you go.
I was just like, oh, you shouldn't be able to do that.
Suspend your disbelief.
Yes. So Quinn has the plan. He knows about Bayside Electric. So he tells Jillian to pass on that information. Michael's working for them. And the great moment with Arturo saying, well, what are we supposed to do, Mr. Mallory? Become a crack commando team and break into Bayside Electric? Ask him if he has a better idea.
Exactly.
They, even as they bust in, they do a fantastic job trying to bring in technology as well, with Arturo rewiring the alarm sensor as well to sort of create confusion using the available technology against them. It's just reinforcing the theme of the episode.
Yeah, and if you think about it, they probably wouldn't even thought to have, like, people of that world probably wouldn't even thought to have done that, because it's a different use of technology.
Exactly.
So as long as we're talking about, you know, breaking the laws of physics and things that can't be done, not that the vortex is physics net in the real world, but still, Arturo says, he opens the vortex and says, that vortex is going to be open for 60 seconds. And then it's open for the next 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes or so. It's like, wow, that's a lot. And I noticed that when I first watched the episode back in 96, I remember thinking, wow, that vortex is open a long time, you know? And I understand why, because dramatic license, you know, they gotta be able to see Quinn in order to make this, you know, very dramatic, very heartfelt goodbye. So it has to stay open a little longer than normal. So I get it. But if you're going to nitpick and, you know, be like exact about things, you'd be like, oh, wait, that's too long. You know?
Yeah. And of course, you know, I go through these episodes and I capture clips to sprinkle throughout the episode of our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And just capturing one little section of the time when the vortex is open and they're saying goodbye to Quinn was 1.5 minutes. And that was only just one little section of it. Right. So I was like, they say 60 seconds. Why they said 60 seconds, I don't know, if they were going to go ahead and have it open for 2.5, 3 minutes.
Right, because they didn't really have to say a number, you know? They didn't have to say a number, so it's, you know, they probably shouldn't have said the number, and it would have been fine.
Exactly. Or just changed it to, like, 3 minutes or something. Like
yeah, that. You know, exactly.
Because at the same time, you know, throughout the series, we're going to see that they jump through the vortex, and sometimes it just immediately closes as soon as all four of them have gone through.
Right.
So, yeah, like you said, dramatic license.
Dramatic license.
But, you know, we get into another Quaid moment, what I'm calling astral Quaid moment.
It was nice. I liked it. I thought it was a very nice, touching moment.
It really was. And it was a little stilted with Arturo. There was a moment where they sort of had him standing there for a couple of beats, as if he was reacting to something Quinn was saying. But Quinn wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there too. And it just seemed like a little off. But yeah, the moment between Quinn and Wade saying goodbye, very touching.
Yep.
And then, of course, you know, the vortex passes through the astral plane and everything is resolved.
It would have been interesting if, again, they don't have the technology to come back to the world, but if he had gotten stuck there, if it didn't pass over, like, how, I wonder what would have happened. Like, the whole show would have been changed, because then they would have tried to find a way to control the slide and then come back for Quinn somehow. It was a neat way to think back then. It's like, oh, are they going to leave him there? But luckily, no, because the vortex passes through the astral plane just like a couple seconds later. So he's saved.
And again, they don't really get into how he's able to be back on the physical plane after traveling from the astral plane. I guess just the vortex, as it passed through, opens on the other side, and it's all good. But, you know, overall, I really enjoyed this episode.
I enjoyed it more than I remember enjoying it. You know, it's not like when I thought back to it, I'm like, oh, I remember this one. It was all right. But I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I did.
And now, another episode of That's Random with Remy.
What's taking so long?
Bringing this type of device does take a little time, Mr. Brown.
Yeah, well, time is what we're going to be doing if we get caught, so hurry up.
This has been another episode of That's Random with Remy.
All right, well, getting into our second episode today. The episode is called Obsession. You have to say it like that. Obsession.
Obsession.
Written by John Povell, with story by Steve Brown and John Povell. Directed by Colin Buxey. This originally aired May 24th of 1996.
Who are you?
The name's Bond. Derek Bond. It's kind of hard to resist saying it that way. You're wondering how I knew you were coming. I'm a seer. I have visions of things before they happen. And I've experienced this night 1,000 times ever since I was a child. I know you're skeptical, Professor, and you, Quinn, you have your own reasons for denial, but you'll accept the possibility, won't you?
Me?
Your friends can't conceive the continuity of the spirit, but you can sense this is a reunion, that we found each other again.
I don't know what you mean by that. Are you implying that you and Miss Wells have met each other before somewhere?
From another time, Professor. We were lovers in a past life. I'm sorry. I've been anticipating this moment my entire life, but this is all happening much too quickly for you. Look, I'll go now and let you regain your balance, but please have dinner with me tonight so we can talk.
I don't know.
I think you do. I'll pick you up at 7, the Dominion Hotel.
Wade is awakened in the wee small hours of the morning from a romantic Romeo and Juliet-induced dream so that the group can slide out of New India and into a dimension where seers and psychics are as common as police officers and shop owners. We learn that it has been this way since Abraham Lincoln's life was saved by a young seer who foresaw his assassination. Lincoln then created the office of the Prime Oracle so that future disasters might be prevented. Indeed, this world has seen the major disasters and assassinations of Earth Prime all prevented by a long line of Prime Oracles. Upon arrival, the group is approached by Derek Bond, a man Wade saw in her dream earlier. In the dream, the two shared a romance that was denied by his father, much like the story of Romeo and Juliet. He calls the sliders by name, recalls Wade's dream, and his and her past lives together, and asks her to meet him for dinner so they might talk more. The group heads to the city, but Wade is almost ran over by the current Prime Oracle, resulting in Remy leaping to her rescue and injuring himself enough to require a trip to the hospital. It's there that they are introduced to a medical oracle, Dominique, who develops a connection with Remy. Upon their exit from the hospital, Remy and Arturo are arrested, fingerprinted, and booked for a future crime they have been foreseen to commit, the murder of Wade Wells. They are released with the warning that if anything does happen to Wade Wells, that they will be found. Meanwhile, the Prime Oracle knows he will be dying soon, and out of two successors, he chooses Derek, the more powerful seer, albeit lacking compassion. The Prime Oracle says that Wade Wells will help him find his way. Back at the hotel, Quinn continually shows his aggravation and displeasure at Wade going to meet Derek. Arturo tries to give comfort, saying that Wade has good sense, but Quinn argues, saying that this world is almost custom-made for Wade and her beliefs. Wade returns to reveal that Derek has asked her to marry him. The next day, when Wade visits Derek, he shows her a recreation of her childhood room that he created by reading her thoughts. Wade is disgusted and hurt by that, thinking her thoughts to be private and she wants to leave, but Derek is surprised and not understanding what he did wrong. He implores her to stay, and she does only to get him to leave the room. She calls the guys, and they plan an escape that is quickly broken up by Derek using his seer powers. Wade is trapped once again in her room and has the rest of the dream from earlier in the episode. She awakens to realize that Derek has obtained great power, but none of the feelings he needs to use that power wisely. He acts like a child, putting his wants above others, trying to force people to love him. He leaves to attend to his duties as the Prime Oracle, while a messenger delivers a prescription to Wade with pills and instructions within. She takes them, and while drifting off to apparent death, calls Quinn and says goodbye. Quinn arrives, but not in time to save Wade. Derek is genuinely distraught as Quinn goes with Wade's body to the ambulance. Derek contemplates his actions and realizes how he abused his power. The ambulance rushes off, stopping far from the hospital. Dominique, Remy, and Arturo run out, awaken Wade from her induced death-like state, and Quinn is relieved. Derek shows up with the police in tow, but decides to let them go, finally realizing that Wade has shown him exactly what he needed to see, how to be a better person and oracle for this world. The sliders slide out, but not before Derek receives a disturbing vision of where the sliders are headed to next.
Okay, now is she wearing the ring?
Well, she didn't want to take it. He insisted.
Don't you guys know anything about women? Once they put the rock on the finger, it's all over. Well, I hear you had quite a night last night.
Derek called. He wants an answer.
Good. Pick up the phone and tell him to get lost.
No.
No? What are you talking about, no?
You heard me.
What are you saying? You're really thinking about marrying this clown.
He's not a clown. If you want to know the truth, Derek's everything that I could possibly ask for.
You know this after one date? I told you, she's infatuated with this guy.
I'm not infatuated. But the least I can do is explain it to him in person.
Yeah, well, we're coming with you.
No. I can handle this myself.
Yeah.
Okay. So as always, we do have some trivia on this episode.
All right. So not too much in this one, but there were some references to the last three slides where they were always running for their lives. I think it was Remy who said that. He said, this is going to be a nice change to not have to worry about that. Wade notes that the psychics here are trained in medical diagnosis, mineral exploration, criminology, which explains, you know, how they can get to the mining on the moon as well, you know, because there was that statement about that. Arturo notes, you know, this place, you know, the economy is robust. The environment is well protected. There's a space program that was pushed forward by the Oracle. He says, maybe the people believe in Oracle so much, you know, that it brings them together quicker so they can come to a consensus and act quicker than they do like on Earth Prime, you know, where there's always like, well, I say this, well, I say that, you know. Here, everyone believes so strongly in psychics and seers that maybe that's why this world seems so much better, because they can agree to fix things before they become really, really bad. They're not arguing. They don't spend time arguing. They spend time on a solution, which I thought that's a neat thing to come from Arturo, who's usually the skeptic.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of the Luck of the Draw episode where he and Quinn were discussing the morality of killing people in the lottery, and that you can't argue with results.
Right. So also in this episode, there was the mention of the president on the news report. The news report was actually extended in the original version to reveal that the president was Jerry Brown, and his first wife was Tori Spelling. So Jerry Brown, a governor here in the States, and of course Tori Spelling was the actress from 90210. Actually, now that I think about it, maybe they put that in there because 90210 was on before Sliders.
Sort of tried to draw the audience over with the promise of Tori Spelling.
Right, because that would do it. You know, that would totally do it.
It worked for the Scream franchise, didn't it?
There you go. This is true. In the deleted scenes also, Derek was actually going to make a speech first. You know, after Wade dies, he was actually going to go, and they were going to show him making a speech, talking to the public. And during that speech is when he was going to say, I've realized, you know, I've recently made a very bad decision. I've abused my power, and I apologize for that, but I promise to you I will never do that again. I, you know, hope to, you know, be a great Prime Oracle and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the speech, that's when he realizes that Wade is still alive, and he rushes off to go find her in the ambulance. That would have been a neat scene to see, just him making that statement to everybody instead of just like hiding it away. Like he's going to admit before the whole world, I screwed up, you know, which was nice. I think that was a nice thing. Arturo is actually the one who explains why the Prime Oracle tried to run Wade down. In the episode proper, it was Derek who said, well, that's why he did it, because, you know, by knocking you down, you met Dominique and blah, 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 blah. But in the original script, it was going to be Arturo saying, well, this is why it happened, because he did this, so it led to this and led to that. So it was Arturo, which he's a little bit out of character, like I said, in this episode, you know, in the original script. You know, he's not the skeptic, you know, he's explaining, well, this is why the Oracle did this, because he knows, you know. And then just a minor change, Dominique, the medical Oracle, was actually named Lori, and Derek was originally named Andrew for whatever reason.
Hour and 10 minutes, where are they? Hello?
He won't let me go.
Wait.
He won't. I'm gonna tie Quinn. It's the only way.
Wait. Hang on, okay?
Remember me.
I'm...
Shh. Just listen. If you get home, tell my mother.
I'm coming right over. I'll be right there.
All right, so getting into our discussion of this episode. Right at the beginning, I guess, with Bond. Derek Bond. Exactly. I love that they call that out, that his name's Derek Bond. And he has to say it like James Bond.
Yeah, I would. If my last name was Bond, I would do that everywhere.
Yeah, I think I probably would too. I might, in fact, change my name. Just so I can do it.
There you go. Do it. Next episode, me and Mr. Bond will be here.
But it immediately gets into the idea of the seers and introduces the idea of past lives and sort of people coming back together from past lives. And this comes in the form of a dream that Wade has had. And the fact that Derek knows about the dream and, in fact, knows all about them.
I will say, before we even talk about the the rest of that. I was not a fan of the acting in the dream world. It felt weird. Like just, you know, I don't know what it was. It just didn't feel like, it felt so unnatural. I don't know what it is. I love Sabrina Lloyd and everything, but I don't know I don't know what it was. It just didn't feel like they were doing a really bang up job of it.
No, I can agree. I'm saying the same thing. I love Sabrina Lloyd. I love the character of Wade.
Mm-hmm.
She's not very Shakespearean of an actor, is she?
Definitely not. Definitely not. But I like the idea. I like the idea of the past life that they shared together. I don't know. I thought about this. What if, like, maybe they didn't have a past life together? Maybe he just sent the dream to her, you know? That's a possibility.
Hey, it is. You know, we get into it later where he sort of went into her mind in order to create her childhood bedroom for her.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't he be able to sort of place suggestions in her mind if he has the ability to go in there?
Exactly.
So it's hard to tell, but this drew me back to the season premiere, Into mm-hmm. the Mystic, you know, where we had a world of, that was, you know, the predominant religion was all about psychics and things of that nature, supernatural nature.
Right.
And here it's sort of the same thing, but sort of twisted in a super positive light.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. This is a much better use of the psychic and seer powers here than it was Into the Mystic. This is like a helpful, this is, you know, the world is very helpful to each other. People just, you know, they help each other out to make sure that like we said, they get to the moon and they're mining on the moon already. You know, it's definitely a different take.
Yeah. It crosses into almost every profession on the planet, mm-hmm. from medicine to politics and so on.
Yeah. Police oracles, you know, which actually now that that's like a Minority Report.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. With the predicting of the crimes.
Yeah, future crime department.
Mm-hmm. Here. Yeah.
And I thought it was great that, you know, after Arturo and Remy are arrested, it's not like they get thrown in prison or anything because technically they haven't done anything. Mm-hmm. It's just a formality of, we have predicted that you will commit this crime. So, you know, sign this thing that says, yes, you have been read what would happen. You know, this is going to happen. And should anything happen to Wade Wells, then we're going to come after you, because we can't do anything until the crime actually takes place. Unlike Minority Report, where they just arrest you and say you were going to kill this person.
Right, exactly.
Prison forever. So, yeah, I thought that was actually quite good.
Yeah, I just did a quick search because, you know, with the way Sliders goes and trying to, you know, get onto the whole, you know, entertainment, you know, headline bandwagon with, you know, giving – quote tributes to the big movies, I had to check, and we're lucky. Minority Report came out in the 2000s, and this episode aired in 96. So there was no copying here. There was no jumping on the bandwagon of precogs and all that thing.
Yeah,
we're good to go. This was not a tribute at all.
Well, Minority Report is based on a Philip K. Dick novel, so.
Oh, okay. So maybe it is.
Maybe it's come from there. I don't know.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, moving on.
Quinn seems really skeptical,
mm-hmm.
even more so than Arturo.
Yeah.
And this makes me think, way jealousy.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be. And that's why, like, when Derek says to him, you know, he's like, Professor, I know you're skeptical. And Quinn, you have your own reasons for denial. It's like, what? Own reasons? I was like, what is that? And I'm like, yes, that's probably it.
He knows about Quaid.
Yeah. He knows his feelings for Wade are there. And, you know, but he's just not revealing them. So, yeah, that was cool. I like that little nod there.
Yeah, and he goes off the rails. Like, he just does every dumb move you can think of.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they play that into the overall how events play out,
mm-hmm.
I think is really good.
mm-hmm. Yeah, he becomes, I mean, Derek is definitely a bit, what's the word? He's definitely pushy. You know, he wants what he wants, but Quinn's not entirely different from that in this episode. You know, he becomes a little bit obsessive, you know, about, you know, why are you doing this? What, you don't want to be with him. You should just be with us. You know, forget about that. Like he's not nice to her.
Yeah. And Arturo and Remy can clearly see that, you know, he's trying to get them to be like, come on, we're going to go and save Wade. You know, we're going to stop her from doing this. And they're just like, we see the jealousy painted on your face right now.
Right.
Just let her be.
Yeah. And I like that they keep coming to, like, Remy is like the love doctor. He's like, once they put the ring on the finger, it's over. You know, it's like, come on, you know, like with the, when he was talking about the last episode with Daylin and all that, like he's the one that you go to when you want to talk about women, like the guy stuff.
You know, we get introduced to the guest, I guess the guest star of the episode.
Yeah.
The Prime Oracle, as played by Isaac Hayes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, this is probably about the time South Park was coming out, right? Because, like, everybody now knows Isaac Hayes as the voice of Chef on South Park.
Yes.
And that would have been about 1996, right? So this was just around the same time.
Yeah, I think so. Let me take a look here. Yeah, South Park debuted 1997.
Oh, okay, so this is just the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I think he plays the Prime Oracle really well, you know. It's kind of like a religious figure. He knows when he's going to die and how it's going to happen. He is choosing a successor between, I guess, two of his students.
Yes, yeah.
Derek being one of them. The other one is Melanie. And they will succeed him once he dies.
Right.
And so he has to make the choice, and ultimately he chooses Derek.
Because even though Melanie has more good sense, more compassion, her powers to actually see events are not as strong as Derek's. And, you know, yeah, she could get more power eventually if she, I guess if she constantly trains and trains and trains, maybe she could expand those powers. But as it is, you know, he just feels, you know, Derek has this much power already. You know, it's more natural power for him to see these events. So chooses him, and thinking that, you know, like we said, Wade will be the one to show him the proper way, you know, compassion and, you know, intelligence like that.
I think that's a really good lesson in this world, in that, you know, you've got these seers, people who can predict the future and so on, but it's not just about predicting the future, it's being able to interpret what is coming to you.
Yes.
You know, just because it seems like something on the surface doesn't mean that there's a deeper meaning behind what it is that you're seeing. And that's a lesson that Derek has to learn. The Prime Oracle actually does set a series of events in motion by attempting to run Wade down. And again, it's that kind of thing of, yeah, he tried to run her over, tried to kill her, but he knew that it wouldn't happen, and he knew that this would send events to an ultimate conclusion where Derek would come to terms with what it was that he was supposed to learn.
Because, if you think about it, if she had not been run down, she still would have met Derek, but they wouldn't have met Dominique. And the whole sequence of events where, you know, she's stuck there and she needs to get out, the prescription never would have been delivered. That would never have worked. You know, so it really was neat the way they did that. The whole timeline was very well done. This episode, I didn't remember it being quite the way I thought it was. There's many levels to this episode that I did not think about when I first watched it.
Yeah, and you called it out in the plot synopsis of the Romeo and Juliet parallels, you know. The dream that she has is very Shakespearean in tone, even though the acting isn't very good.
Right.
Reading Romeo and Juliet before she had the dream the first time at the beginning of the episode. So
taking the poison and killing herself, just like in Romeo and Juliet as well.
Yeah, but of course events play out a bit differently.
Right.
Romeo and Juliet, they both end up dying. Spoilers. Mm.
Yeah, if you don't know, people, okay?
That's like 200 years worth
of stuff. They just haven't gotten around to it yet. So we have in this episode, we have Wade, who is very important to Derek. But Derek, you know, this great seer, there's a blind spot. Like when he looks at Wade, there's things that he can't see about her and him together, which is kind of interesting. You know, for all the things that he can see, that's the one thing he can't see. And it's like he says, it scares him a little bit, you know, which, you know, I think that's how it is sometimes when you love someone. You might not see what the future is going to be, but you just know you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. Derek goes ahead and proposes to Wade, and she's not sure if she can accept. And this drew me back to the Prince of Wales.
Right.
Because that episode ended with the proposal.
Right.
And maybe she considered it, but probably not. Here, it actually happens a bit earlier in the slide, so she actually has time to think on it. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe she could.
I thought that she might. And I think if he hadn't, like, screwed up with the childhood room, she might have stayed.
Yeah. If he hadn't gotten all, you know, Silence of the Lambs on her.
Exactly. Yeah.
She would have thought about it.
But, I mean, it was good because, you know, it, like, it shows that, you know, he needed to know boundaries. You know, he didn't know boundaries. He's like, I have all this power. I can do anything I want. I can read anybody's mind. But no, just because you could doesn't mean you should. And that's what she taught him.
That's going back to him needing to understand and interpret his visions properly.
Right.
Just because he saw in his mind that he and Wade were supposed to be together doesn't make it so.
Right.
You know, he was trying to hold on to that because he saw it, whereas he was too blind to see that her being there was to test him, to sort of make him a better person and make him understand that he needs to interpret his visions properly. Yes, I had a dream of us in a past life and we were going to be together again. So we need to be together again now. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll find each other again in another life.
Exactly.
Like that, exactly. You need to be a better person. You need to take the higher ground if you're going to be the prime oracle, the leader that the world deserves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Wade's foreseen death comes to fruition again because the police had arrested Remy and Arturo for her murder. I guess technically they did, but not quite.
Yeah. I mean, they foresaw murder and technically they did murder her, you know, in quotes. But yeah, I thought that was neat because I didn't think about that because I had forgotten about that. By the time I got to the end, like I said, there's so much going on. By the time I got to the end, I had forgotten that they had been arrested for the murder. But it makes sense, you know, why they were arrested in the beginning now. Now, the next episode, Derek says, I've just seen where they're going because he's very disturbed. You know, like he's all happy and then suddenly there's a look on his face that he's just freaking out. And, you know, Dominic says, what's wrong? And he says, I've just seen where they're going. Well, in the production way of doing things, it would have been Invasion, you know, and his reaction is perfect for that because Invasion was a major big turn in the Sliders' history.
Mm-hmm.
But as it originally aired, the next place they were going to was the Greatfellas world, which is not that scary, really, you know, it's not that disturbing.
Right.
So it didn't really work because people who were watching it back then would be like, wow, they must be going somewhere crazy. And they go to the next one. It's like, hey, how you doing, Sliders? You know, it's like, this is where they were going. This is what Derek was worried about. This doesn't seem terrible, you know?
Yeah. You see, it's the perks of watching it in the way it's supposed to be watched. We now know that he was probably having a vision of the Cro-Mags and what was to come from that.
Exactly. And I tried to think back, like, when I first watched it, like, did I think about that? Like, oh, this next episode's going to be great, you know, like, amazing. Like, is it be bad for them? And then we go to the next episode and it's Greatfellas. I don't remember if I was disappointed or if I was wondering about that or not, but I imagine I probably was because it was set up like, oh, they're going someplace very disturbing.
So that makes the whole thing make more sense. Because really, you could also just go back to it and go, was there supposed to be another scene there or something like that? You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Were they supposed to like slide into like shark infested waters or something like that?
Exactly.
You're going to show us like them sliding into some dangerous situation that they have to get out of and then the episode ends? I don't know.
It's the Fox Network. Damn you, Fox.
So that's it. Things are being revealed. The show is flowing beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Once you watch it improperly.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, it was a pretty decent episode.
Like I said, I like this one a lot more than I remember liking it. I mean, back in the day, I watched it and I was like, oh, it's not too bad. Pretty cool. But rewatching it, I don't know. Again, looking at these episodes with a whole new eye now, I was like, wow, this episode stood out to me. I'm like, I like this one. I would watch this one again. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
You stay away from her.
I came to say goodbye and to beg your forgiveness.
You're letting me go?
I'm going to miss you more than you'll ever know. Thank God the Prime Oracle spared you.
The Prime Oracle?
You were right. He knew the only way I'd ever let you go is if you were dead. So he introduced you to Dominique and the whole chain of events which unfolded thereafter.
He knew we'd trick you?
Now we're both free.
Maybe we'll meet again in another lifetime.
I hope so. I'd like a fresh start. You. Take good care of her.
Come along, Mr. Brown. New worlds await.
All right, so getting into some messages in time.
All right, so we'll start off with Obsession. So, a lot of people on the old forums, we get these things from the forums and on Google. There, it's like an archive forum. And so this is what people were thinking back when Obsession aired originally. I'm going to milk that. They were saying, you know what? I don't really believe in psychics, but really like this episode. It was really well done. That was a lot of people were saying that. Like, yeah, I don't go for all the psychic stuff, but they did a good job. Some people said what Arturo said in the deleted scene. So they wouldn't have had access to this back then. But there was at least one person, or maybe it was two. It was like a whole thread. And they said, you know what? I bet people here just they believe in the seer so much that they really help each other out. They listen to what they say and they do what they're told rather than just like, you know, beating each other up about things like arguing. So some people are really on the ball here with their predictions. It's pretty cool. They said there were a couple people who did not like the season so far. They were complaining about New Age stuff because they were like, oh, we got the Into the Mystic with the magic. We had Jillian with the ghosts and the spirits. And now we have this. We have this psychic world. And they're like, you know what? I like this show better as just a sci-fi show. I understand what they're saying, but that's three episodes out of what, 20 some, you know, it's not really totally getting to New Age stuff, but they made it seem like they're just not liking it because of this New Age trend that they're doing. It's like, well, you know, someone said that Sliders doesn't really know what kind of show it wants to be. And I'm thinking like Sliders is one of those shows. That's like, it could be anything.
Exactly. You know,
it doesn't have to be just a sci-fi show. I mean, the sci-fi part of it really is the timer and, you know, the sliding through the vortex. But then you're just telling stories about people. So it doesn't have to be a sci-fi thing every single week. In fact, I mean, later on when they get to the Cro-Mags and the sci-fi-ish of that, I wasn't a huge fan of that originally, you know? So I like the episodes like this.
Yeah. These early episodes.
Yeah. Other people were saying the dream sequence acting was bad. Someone said, you know what? I could see the script they were reading from. Someone was glad that Quinn got told to like back off from Wade because he was acting possessive. You know, he should just tell her your feelings. If you're going to act this way, at least tell her how you really feel. Don't hold those feelings inside is what they were saying. Let's see. There were rumors, I guess, going around during the second season that John Rhys-Davies was going to leave. So when they saw this scene with Wade dying, they were like, oh, my God, maybe Wade's the one who's leaving. It's not going to be, you know, it's Sabrina Lloyd's going, not John Rhys-Davies. So they were wrong on that. Someone said about next week's episode that it looks a bit iffy, Great Fellas. They said, I don't know, that looks a little cheesy to them. And I don't remember the episode totally, but at this point, I'm like, yeah, I kind of remember a little bit of it. It was different. The other thing they said, it was a great ending because the bad guy was not really a full-on bad guy. Like, he had a moment where he was able to turn and change his beliefs, and they really changed the world, you know, in this slide. Like, sometimes you're not sure if they're going to make real changes, you know, like what they do. Like, in the Good, Bad, and the Wealthy, did they really make any changes? We said probably not. But in this world, the actions, the interventions that they did actually did change the world. It'll affect the way things are going to happen in this world.
Yeah, they're affecting positive change.
Mm-hmm, definitely. All right, so now going to messages in time for Jillian. Some people were saying, this is the best episode yet. The thing to remember is this episode aired number 3 in this season. You know, so they were saying, this is the best episode of the season. Well, it's, you know, episode number 3. So, you know, apparently they didn't like, you know, the Into the Mystic or Love Gods, but they were wondering also, what happened to David and Diane in the van? And then someone else is like, are they showing the episodes out of order again? Yeah, they are. Come on.
Yep.
There was, oh my God. Okay. Well, we talked already about the length of the vortex opening and all that.
Yeah.
But there was a whole thread, an entire thread. And this was a long thread, similar to the thread about Quinn's sperm count and Mrs. Fields or Miss Hill's ovaries or whatever it was. This thread was all about the postman in the nude world. And it was like, is he wearing shoes? Like, how does he keep warm? Because there's snow on the ground over there. Do they just walk around without shoes? Where does he hang his badge? You know, like, he has to have identification. Does his hat that he's wearing keep the heat in? Does this, does that? I was like, really? This is what we're talking about? And it was a long thread. I'm like, I could not believe it. This is what they were focusing on. It was hilarious. I was like, oh my God. Whatever, people. Whatever. Okay. All right. Let's see. Oh, someone had said, what if someone who was chasing the sliders went through the vortex because, you know, the vortex was open for so long. And the thing to remember is this aired before El Cid ever aired. So they would get that wish in a couple episodes where they see someone chasing after the sliders and they go through the vortex as well. And someone was like, what if they do that? What if other people go through the vortex without, you know, them knowing? So it was kind of neat to see their prediction there. And then finally, again, the laws of physics, someone, or actually no, a bunch of people were freaking out because they saw Quinn's shadow fall on the sliders at some point in that early, in the early scenes. And they said, why couldn't they just digitally take out the shadow? You know, the laws of physics in this episode are so off, you know, cars pass through him, but then he's sitting in a taxi, you know, it's like, come on. They were saying, you know, this happened on Star Trek, Next Generation. Geordi and Ro were displaced somehow and they walked through doors, but they could still stand on the Enterprise floors, you know. And as we said, you know, budget is a big part of this. You know, maybe they couldn't afford to do the special effects for that. Maybe they didn't have time to do all that. And then one reasonable fan said, you know what? We can't be scientifically perfect in every aspect. To expect that is going to ruin your enjoyment of the show. So again, you just got to suspend your disbelief, you know, that's like the big thing. And there was one more, I forgot to put this quote in there, but I have it here because it was just funny. One of the posters, actually his name is on here. Jim Harris, back in 96, May of 96, he posted this on the beginning of his post. He goes, it was supposed to be Arturo talking and says, "Great Scott, Mr. Mallory, it appears as if we slid into a world where people on the internet don't spam, don't cross-post to inappropriate newsgroups, and actually post only when they have something intelligent to say. Could we have landed in paradise?" I was like, that's good, man. Mr. Harris, wherever you are, I salute you.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. So that's all for messages in time. But we have messages from Earth Prime.
Yes, we do. And as we threw out, you could only be the first person to be the second bit of feedback. And it turns out that the first person to be our first bit of feedback is the first person to be our second bit of feedback. Because Travis has emailed us again.
We love Travis.
Yeah, he's awesome. So he says, just finished Sliders rewatch episode 6, and you guys were talking about the Gayheart woman, who is Rebecca Gayheart. She's awesome. Being on the show Dead Like Me. 12 years later, that is one of my favorite shows ever. I rewatched the show a year ago and got so emotional knowing all I had to look forward to was the god-awful movie they did in 2009. Anyway, I would not be mad at all if you guys did a Dead Like Me rewatch podcast.
Hmm? Yeah.
I'm not saying yes, not saying no.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea.
I know it was a small show that didn't get a ton of viewers, but I am willing to bet the fans are like me and very into the show. Mandy Patinkin is one of my favorite actors, and he was tremendous in the series. Totally agree.
Yeah.
You could do an episode on his character alone and speculate about his more than interesting backstory. Thanks, Travis Bryan from Philadelphia.
I like it. I like Dead Like Me. We talked about that, you know?
We did.
Because, like I said, I read the book On a Pale Horse by Piers Anthony that it was based on. I'm like, this is, when that show came out, I was like, this is awesome. They're doing a show based on this? I was like, yes, I'm there.
I mean, we only have so many hours in the week, so.
Exactly.
It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Someday after all these Sliders episodes are done and in the can, we'll revisit it and we'll see. You never know. You never know. So stick around.
And we do have some more stuff from the forum over at sliders.tv. iReactions, who is the Sliders God of sliders.tv? And he wrote about Love Gods and Quinn definitely not being enthused at being in a world where he was basically a piece of meat. And he said, interestingly, Jerry and Quinn were completely opposed. Jerry thought the woman-only world was awesome, which goes to show how very, very talented Jerry can actually be.
Right, because we were talking about how it seemed like they were all just so into it, you know, Quinn and Remy and Arturo. And I looked and Quinn was smiling, you know, when they were making jokes in the police precinct. But in retrospect, maybe he was just smiling at Remy's jokes, at how juvenile they were. But he did a good job of, you know, showing that he really didn't, like, appreciate, you know, being treated like that. So he makes a good point. Definitely makes a good point.
All right. Well, next week's episodes are going to be Invasion, as we were saying, and followed by post-traumatic slide disorder.
That's one of my favorites right there.
Yes.
That's a good one.
We sort of alluded to this episode a few episodes back where we're talking about evil Arturo.
Exactly. It's coming. It's coming, folks. All right. That's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity for the lost and found parts of our show. We've got our friends over at Sliders Slide Side and the active forum, of course, we just mentioned, over at sliders.tv. Sign up for a handle and get on there and start talking about the episodes, either ours or, you know, the Sliders, the episodes themselves. A very active community.
Yes, and remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to the rewatchpodcast@gmail.com, just like our awesome friend Travis Bryant, who has sent us awesome feedback, and I love it.
I love it too. Thank you, Travis. We do appreciate it. We really do.
And also, if you've enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. That helps with search results, build up the listenership, and of course, that awesome listener interaction that we love. All right. Well, time to get out of here. So until next time, this has been a testament to my foolishness.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.